This is Patrick Patterson, and you're listening to the NTTB Podcast. Super Nintendo, Sega Genesis. Super Nintendo, Sega Genesis. Super Nintendo, Sega Genesis.
And welcome into episode 25 of the NTTB podcast. As always, I'm your host, Alex. Of course, joined in by my co-host, Anthony.
What's good tonight?
And not a lot good tonight. It's not a very good night.
You start off with hitting them with one of these.
If you can find it. Yeah, no, this is... I'm pretty sure all of Thunder fandom knows what's going on. So, this podcast should start off celebrating the fact that we have a season-high 7-game win streak, and we're a season-high 9 games over 500. But instead, a lot like the New Orleans Pelicans and the Memphis Grizzlies had to do today, we probably have to announce that one of our starters will be out for the rest of the year because of an injury suffered during the Pistons game today. And so Andre Robertson, as many of you know, it looked like he suffered a torn patella tendon in the third quarter, a torn left patella tendon in the third quarter of the Pistons game, and it did not look pretty, and it looked like a season-ending injury, and more than likely it will be a season-ending injury. And so, number one, that completely sucks because this team was just starting to gel, just starting to get into the groove of becoming not just a good team, but it seemed like they were becoming a great team. They were consistently over the past week either, you know, going up big against teams and staying in the lead for a good part of the game, or they were, you know, kind of coasting for most of the game and having the ability to come back at the end of games. But the margin of error has gotten a lot smaller, has gotten a lot thinner now with the loss of Andre Robertson.
Well, not just that. He's only been back for, what, maybe like 4 or 5 games since the ankle injury. And we saw there at times that defense was just all out of whack. They had no idea what they were doing, shuffling around. And he gets back in there, kind of resettles things. They refocus. Mm-hmm. They now have, what, the 7-game winning streak, which is the longest in the NBA right now?
Yeah, it's the longest in the NBA.
NBA winning streak. And then you lose a guy like that. You know, it's tough. And even more so, as I've been saying for the last couple of weeks, he's coming into his own little niche offensively, which I said, you know, he mm-hmm. should be doing, which is cutting to the basket, running the baseline, moving off the pick and rolls, and getting 6, 7, 8 points a night.
And it honestly seemed like he was starting to get a little bit more comfortable on the free throw line.
Yeah.
Nothing, you know, nothing dramatic, nothing like, well, he was going to start shooting 70%, nothing like
it's
that.
It's only 40 games. Yeah, I mean, 40 games. It's only 4 games back, but he was shooting 61% from the free throw line.
Was he really? I didn't know that.
Yeah. I mean, again, the sample is 4 games. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it still seemed like he was developing a more comfort level, a higher comfort level with the free throw line, with driving to the basket, with running the baseline, with getting those open shots because nobody's out there really paying attention to him.
And what completely sucks about this, so, you know, other than the fact that, you know, Dre's a real good dude, he's a real good guy, and, you know, it just sucks to see somebody that has put that much into their career. You know, you look at Andre Robertson's career, and you look at somebody that he has made the most with what he has, and he honestly, for, you know, when you look at a complete player, somebody with a complete game, he doesn't have that. He doesn't necessarily have a complete game. So he's taken what he has and he's actually maximized the potential that he has to become one of the best perimeter defenders in the league, and just one of the best, you know, teammates in the league. When you look at his the impact that he has on the floor, when he's off the floor versus when he's on the floor, it's amazing. It's just, you know, somebody like that, it seems to be such a negative on offense. You know, what they do on a defensive end for the team like that is amazing to me.
Well, his numbers are comparable to Kawhi Leonard's, if not better at times. The only difference is Kawhi Leonard's offensive game has developed and Andre Robertson's hasn't.
Yeah. And so just getting into the numbers a little bit as far as what Andre provides to the team when he's on the floor and what happens when he gets off the floor. And so these are a few a few stats that were put up by Fred Katz. I do want to give Fred Katz, you know, credit for, you know, looking all this up and putting this on his Twitter feed. So the Thunder outscore their opponents by 10 points per 100 possessions when Robertson's in the game. Conversely, they get outscored. So a team that has Russell Westbrook, Steven Adams, Paul George, and Carmelo Anthony, they get outscored by 0.9 points per 100 possessions when Andre Robertson is off the floor. So that's a big impact right there. Okay, another stat. So after tonight, so including the Pistons game, the Thunder allow 96.4 points per 100 possessions when Robertson's on the floor. When he's off the floor, they allow 108.3 points per possession. So the Thunder...
So you're talking about, what, 14-point swing?
Yeah, a 14-point swing. Per 100 possessions? Yeah, per 100 possessions whenever he's on the floor versus off the floor. That's a lot. That is a huge amount. We're not talking about... You know, whenever you're talking about NBA, in the NBA, and you're talking about stats like that, you know, a bump of 2 to 3 points, you know, that's you can find like 10 teams within 2 to 3 points of each other. You know, so we're talking about very small margin, and so you're talking about a 14-point swing whenever he's on the floor versus when he's on the floor, off the floor. That's something that should scare Thunder fans a little bit. You know, it should really, you know. I mean, we just saw he was out for, was it 8 games, 8 or 9 games?
About 8 games,
and
yeah.
I think they went 3-6 whenever he was out here recently, which he was out because he had patellar tendonitis. And that night, it wasn't an ankle. It was patellar tendonitis that he was out for during those 9 games. And so you kind of have to wonder, and it was the same knee too. Yep. You kind of have to wonder whether that played a factor in this, whether he wasn't necessarily completely healed or whether it was just going to be something that
was going to happen.
It was going to happen regardless.
It was
a
ticking time bomb.
Yeah. So what do the Thunder do now? And so, you know, that question kind of comes up because, you know, we had a 9-game, you know, little trial run whenever he was out. And so we tried Ferguson. And I think they just stuck with Ferguson, right, the whole time?
Yeah, well, yeah.
Yeah,
they went with Ferguson.
Or did they do Abrinas at first and then they brought in Ferguson?
No. They went with Ferguson the whole time.
So they went with Ferguson the whole time. And of course, like I said, they went 3-6. And
no, I mean, the rookie stepped up in a couple of games and played well, but
he played like a rookie in most of the other games.
Yeah.
Yeah, so what do they do? I mean, you can't so kind of just, you know, when you look at the numbers, any lineup with Ferguson and with Abrinas, they have a net rating. They have a negative net rating, meaning that teams score more against them than they score, okay? When you have Josh Huestis on the floor with the starters, I believe it's a lot more comparable. It's a lot more in the positive net rating range, not that much. But the thing with Josh Huestis is he's not a good defender against wings. He's more of he's a better defender against bigger threes, smaller fours. But when you're talking about twos and maybe quick twos, he tends to struggle a little bit guarding them on the perimeter as far as them getting around him and things of that nature. So what do we do? What do you think they do?
So just off the top of my head, you can go with the Rook or you can go with Abrinas at the shooting guard and just mm-hmm. fill that void and, you know, make a collective effort to play stronger team defense to kind of mm-hmm. compensate some of their shortfalls. You can also move George to the two, Carmelo to the three, and bring in Grant at the four or Patterson at the four.
Okay.
I would probably lean more towards Grant at starting at the four.
What about – so what about moving George to the two and maybe starting Ferguson at three or starting Abrinas? You know, it's going to be interchangeable. The twos and the threes in the NBAs are kind of interchangeable now.
I would be more comfortable moving George to the two and starting Huestis at the three.
I can see that.
That would, to me, would feel more natural to mm-hmm. both their abilities. And then, you know, bigger twos, smaller three, quicker threes, you can, you know, flip-flop between Ferguson and Huestis, and then George and Huestis can then switch off and on between the guys in between there. Honestly, I think I would think that you would go with Grant moving into the lineup.
You think?
I think so. Mm-hmm. I think they've tried Ferguson in that lineup right now, and I don't think, obviously, the results weren't what they expected. So why not put another big man in there who's athletic and can run up and down and see if you can impact the offensive way and also hold their own on the defense?
I just I don't see Carmelo being able to guard threes anymore.
Well, but
they're too fast for him.
But on the other end, you could move Grant over to guarding a three. And
you think?
I mean, he's not. He's more adept to guarding fours and fives.
Yeah, he's more adept to being a weak side,
right?
Helper.
But I still think he's got a little bit of legs in him where he can at least stay in front of the guy.
Yeah. I don't know. The Thunder have a lot of soul searching to do. This is a lot of this.
What do you think happens?
Well, I think one of the only positives from this is that it happened January 27th and not February 9th, meaning that
the trade deadline.
Yeah. So we have a little bit of time to maybe change course. So before the injury, I think a lot of our targets were more wings that could maybe score, not as maybe two way wings, but nobody that you would necessarily say, hey, I need them to start right now. Just some help for the bench, things of that nature. And maybe even a big man, a backup big man, someone like Dwayne Dedman from Atlanta or things of that nature. Now, it kind of course corrects to maybe going after a two-way wing that can maybe help you out. Somebody like Alec Burke out of Utah, or maybe even Rodney Hood out of Utah.
It's a long shot, but your boy Lou Williams.
But he's not defensively, he's nothing. Yeah,
but he's one of those guys where their offense more than makes up for their lack of defense.
Most of the time. But
generally, 80%.
But remember, he was on Houston's team last year, and they didn't get past the second round.
That's true.
Like I've always said, those shooters that are hot during the regular season, they sometimes cool off drastically in the playoffs. And so players like that, like Lou Williams, things of that nature. So my targets would definitely be in the Alec Burke, Rodney Hood range. Instead of going after a Lou Williams, maybe a Marco Bellinelli out of Atlanta, things of that nature. And so at least it happened now, and it didn't happen February 9th. With that said, it's still this team is going to have to change completely how they play on the defensive end. And so, he did a lot on the defensive end as far as covering up the mistakes that others made. Him and Adams are a lot the same in that way. Adams, I kind of feel bad for him, man, because Adams is going to be covering up a lot of mistakes. He's going to be, we saw within that 9-game period, he got very tired after like the fourth or fifth game. He looked a little bit more sluggish than he usually does. It's just, he's such a big proponent of the defense on this team that it's just, it's a big blow to this team.
So who's starting tomorrow?
Let's see. Talking about Philly, so you're talking about Ben Simmons.
Talking about the Feds.
So you talk about. I'm just looking at starting lineup. So Ben Simmons, Redick, Arco, Robert Covington, and then of course you have Embiid up front, and I don't know who their four is, but that person plays up front also. Or Saric.
Dario Saric.
I would lean more towards. Man, J.J. Redick is a bad guy to go try to
for a rookie.
I would probably have to move George to the two. I think George can stick with J.J. Redick, and probably put Houston at the three.
So you think Houston starts tomorrow?
I think so.
Okay.
I think Ferguson. I like the kid. And he's getting, he's showing okay on his runs. I mean,
he's definitely earned minutes.
He's earned minutes. He definitely has. And I mean, he's, as far as like the type of defense that he plays, he's a lot more like Andre Robertson than is anybody else on the team. Meaning that, because of his slenderness, he's able to get under picks. But I think you go with Houston as far as starting tomorrow.
Okay.
And it's a shame that you have to, immediately just go ahead and play the next day. But that's the nature of the beast when it comes to
well,
NBA.
this could be a benefit to them because they don't have time to dwell on the situation. They don't have time to let that seep in.
Yeah.
And so,
because you saw that today. You
exactly.
Saw, yeah.
I mean, you saw that on the court, you know, that. But so, you know, and it's not to say that they're not going to think about their friend. You know, Russ has come out and said, you know, this is a huge loss for their team.
Oh, they've all. They've. I mean, it's a brotherhood in that locker
right.
room now.
And so, but maybe playing the very next day, trying to figure out that rotation, maybe that works out in their favor.
Maybe it does. Yeah, man, it just sucks. You know, it sucks to lose anybody, you know, but to lose Andre at this point in the season and just kind of looking at future implications in the playoffs, if you happen to play Houston, if you happen to play Golden State, those are teams that you definitely need Andre Robertson out there, and so he's not going to be out there.
Well, not just that, on the win streak on Thursday night, we tied Minnesota in the loss column.
Yeah, we did. They tied us because they lost.
Well, they tied us. So, you know, that race was heating up.
And I think they won tonight, or they're winning tonight and pretty handily.
San Antonio has also been
tumbling a little bit.
Down. So, you know, that 3-4-5 situation is
still in play.
Yeah, ever changing. And so.
Yeah, so Minnesota is, I believe they are a game and a half ahead of us because they have played three games more than us.
Right.
So we're there, and it's gonna take a little bit more for us to actually move up in the standings now because of this injury. And I think it's a huge injury. A lot of people may look at this and say, "Oh, they just lost somebody that, you know, is a net negative on the offensive end. He's okay defensively." No, this is the heart and soul of our defense is Andre Robertson. Between Robertson and Adams, they are the heart and soul of their defense. And when one of them goes out, the defense struggles. And sometimes the team struggles to keep up offensively with other teams with how much they score with Robertson out. So it sucks. It's bad. And, you know, I wish the best to Andre. I wish him the best in his recovery. That the Thunder haven't officially said that he has torn his patella, but it looked very much like he did. And
well, that report came from ESPN and Adrian Wojnarowski.
Yeah, for Woj.
So that was a Woj bomb that he dropped it on. So we're actually one game behind the Minnesota and two games behind the Spurs.
Yeah. Yeah, and as far as Minnesota goes, I don't think they've updated it yet.
That's not including today's game. Yeah.
So it's going to be 1.5 ahead of. But, yeah, it's just bad. It's just bad. So shouts out to him. Hopefully, you know, recovers. It's a bad injury to have in the NBA. That's the same injury that kind of Jeremy Lin had at the beginning of the year. The same injury that Tony Parker had in the playoffs last season, and he didn't return until late December, early January. So it's going to be about a 6 to 10 month recovery, probably. Seeing that he's a little bit younger and he's a little bit lighter, I'm looking more on the 6 month side of it. So he should be ready for. Let me see. We're in January. That would put him. What, July, August time frame?
Start of training camp.
Start of training camp. So he probably won't play any preseason games, but he'll probably be ready for the beginning of the season type thing. So heal up quick, Andre. You know, we're praying for you.
Thoughts and prayers go out to you.
And, yeah, so, you know, hopefully the Thunder are able to kind of, not necessarily not recover from this, but
to
evolve from this. So just moving past that, I just want to go ahead and go look at the week in review. So on Tuesday, we got that W against Brooklyn, 109-108. We entered the third quarter down by 11. It was kind of a game where we came out very sluggish. And, you know, that young team from Brooklyn came out, was shooting threes, was, you know, running all over us. And then the fourth quarter starts. Felton scored the first 10 points of the fourth quarter for the Thunder and brought the Thunder within 5 points at the 7 or 8 minute mark whenever Westbrook went back in the game. And then from there, the Thunder took a one-point lead with 6:14 left in the game, and it was completely back and forth after that. The final defensive possession, or the second-to-last defensive possession for the Thunder, I got a little bit worried because Melo got switched on to Spencer Dinwiddie, who had a great game, and Dinwiddie just drove right past him and scored the bucket easily to give the Nets a one-point lead. And that's going to be stuff that you see in the playoffs. You know, the close game, if you have Melo out there, he's going to be a liability defensively. And I don't know why in the world, because Donovan had the opportunity to take him out, but Donovan kept him in there. And so the Nets saw that. The first thing they attacked was Melo. fortunately, Westbrook got the ball on the other end, and behind possibly an illegal pick by George, you know, drove to the basket and went up on Jared Allen and actually made the layup and put the Thunder up by one with 3 seconds left. And then Dinwiddie missed the three. He was guarded by Robertson, sad face. But on the telecast, it looked like it went in.
From watching it live, it looked like it goes.
Like I saw it and I was like, oh, like I was pissed off. But I was looking at the TV and nobody was reacting like the Thunder had lost. Like you saw the players kind of, you know, all right. Like usually when that happens, like the players, you know, some of them crumble down to the ground and in shock or whatever, or nobody from the Nets team was jumping up and down. Yeah, nobody from the Nets team was jumping up and down and celebrating. And then finally I took a look at it again, and it hit the bottom of the backboard and kind of bounced back and hit the net, so it looked like it went through the net. So what's funny about that is Spencer Dinwiddie, is dating Andre Robertson's sister.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
You didn't know that, did you?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, apparently.
He had a sister.
He has two. Very pretty. Very pretty sisters.
Didn't know that.
Yeah, whenever I went to the Enes Kanter camp, where that was basically his last day with the Thunder, so everybody went to visit him. You know, Andre Robertson was one of the players that went to visit him, and one of his sisters was with him. Very tall. She looks like a volleyball player type, you know, maybe basketball player. Mm. But I don't know if that one. I think he has like two or three sisters, so I don't know if it's that one that dates Spencer Dinwiddie or another one. But yeah, man, he had to defend the guy that's dating his sister. So I wonder if it was one of those things where, you know, if you make this basket, I'll let you date my sister.
You out of the family.
So the Thunder came out with a 109-108 victory in that one. Move on to Thursday against Washington. That was pretty much
a Thunder game well handled.
Yeah, very well
handled.
They did
blow a 17-point lead.
How close did – I don't think they got it that close. Like –
No, they
like 6 points.
No, I think they took the lead in that game.
No, the Thunder led all the way through.
Oh well, it got close.
Okay, so it got close. So Thunder led all the way through against Washington. They won 121-112. It was a great vintage game by Westbrook. He had 46 points, 6 rebounds, 6 assists on 19 of 29 shooting. It was just basically a dominant performance by the Thunder all the way around. They forced 23 turnovers. They scored 60 points in the paint. The Thunder's bench, you know, won there. Little battle with the Wizards bench, 29-15. And it was just basically the Thunder led all the way through. I think they had a little bit of a hiccup in the third quarter or fourth quarter, but it was still pretty well in hand. Now, I will say this. What I found strange about this game was, and I think at the end of the game it did get a little bit close, because I guess Bradley Beal and Westbrook were going back and forth.
In the third
hitting
quarter,
shots.
Bradley Beal got hot.
And in the fourth quarter, too,
yeah, and
him and Westbrook were going back and forth. But one of the things that I found a little bit weird was at the end of that game, 2 or 3 minutes left in that game, they took Andre Robertson out. Did you notice that?
I did.
And they put Terrence Ferguson, and Robertson never came back. So I wonder if, I don't know, maybe he was feeling a little bit of knee soreness that game.
Yeah, it started there.
I don't know, man. I don't know. But, yeah, so they won that game pretty handily. I mean, it felt pretty handily. And then today's game against Detroit, they won 121-108. Again, another dominant performance before Dre's injury. And then you can tell that Dre's injury affected the team's psyche a little bit after that. I think Detroit went on like a 10-0 run after that.
Well, looking at it, so from the moment, he never gets full lift. Just immediately
doesn't.
Goes down.
I mean, he looks like he was shot
and then
in the middle of the year.
To make things worse, He knew something was wrong. He literally crawls himself underneath the goal, and he was like, yo, he knew it was done.
Oh, and it sucked because it was bad for him. I felt bad for him. Not just, I mean, he got hurt. He got injured. But he went up for an alley-oop. In the middle of going up, his leg gives out. So his body just completely contorts and he falls straight on his tailbone.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he violently fell on his tailbone. So I thought part of the reason he got injured was because of that. You know, and I kind of saw, like, whenever they were working on him, that they were, like, he was turned around on his side. So I thought they were looking at his tailbone. And, man, and they brought out the stretcher and the air cast, and I was like, no, that's not that. That's not the back.
It's one of those things, like, It's one thing to see like a player get injured and then they're able to get up or they're assisted up and they're taken out to the background. And then later you find out, you know, like it was worse than what it looked like. And then it's a different thing to see it when a player immediately knows.
Now, this was bad from the
from
beginning.
The jump.
Yeah.
That, yo, he's done.
Yeah, he didn't necessarily grab his knee and writhe around in pain or anything like that.
He pulled himself like somebody from Saving Private Ryan.
He pulled somebody who got their legs blown off and they were just
drug himself to the sideline. It was not a good look.
Yeah,
and you can see immediately they came out.
Steven Adams right next to him.
You can see Westbrook's face.
Westbrook
kinda,
knew exactly what happened. Westbrook, you can see he was a little bit worried. But yeah, man, it's that. So basically, how I'm feeling right now, and how, you know, kind of like this podcast is kind of somber. That's what kind of happened to the Thunder after the injury, as far as how they played. And so, team was in shock after that. They kind of just survived. You know, they did play. I mean, they won by 13 points, but Detroit got close. Detroit got within, I think, 6 points, and so it kind of looked like, oh crap, here we go. But the Thunder survived. You know, they did what they had to do to win, and they won. The Big Four, they did a great job. They scored 91 points amongst them. Westbrook had a triple double. Carmelo scored his 25,000th point, which is something that's pretty amazing, because I mean, LeBron just scored his 30,000th point a couple days ago,
and Melo's within shooting distance of Jerry West on that list.
Yeah, I think he like 164 points or 169, something like that. But in the end, it was unfortunately it was a Pyrrhic victory. You know, it was a victory that cost a lot to the Thunder, and so they move on the rest of the season without Andre Robertson. So a little bit of Thunder news. So after this game and all the depressing news, we find out that Paul George replaced DeMarcus Cousins on the All-Star Game roster. Which we'll talk about DeMarcus Cousins here in a little bit, but replaced him. Team LeBron's coach, whoever that is, will decide who will start in place of Boogie in the starting lineup. So it doesn't necessarily mean that that Paul George will start, but they'll decide who will start in the starting lineup.
You know, I had a question about that because I thought, you know, given the new team captain stuff like that, I wondered if maybe the captain himself could pick.
I just read that it was the coach that actually picks.
Come on, NBA.
Well, I mean, they didn't televise the thing. Like, it sucks that, like, after the whole picking the roster and everything, that LeBron and Steph were like, man, this should have been televised. And, you know,
well, the league wanted to do it. They came out afterwards and said, I don't know if it was the league or sources said, they couldn't get a few of the athletes on board, and that's why they didn't televise it.
A few of the athletes? Like who?
Yeah, well, they didn't mention no names, but we already knew from the jump that, like, Durant was not a fan of being the captain because he didn't want to have to pick. Yeah. So he can't be the only player on there that either didn't want to be picked last or...
Screw Durant.
You know, this is not even about Durant right now. It's just the sentiment of these younger athletes and stuff like that. They're not about getting their feelings hurt and stuff like that.
They didn't man up.
And, you know, it was at one point in time they were talking about on Millennials. TNT, on the TNT broadcast.
Uh-huh.
You know, talk about how on, like, Kenny was like, you know, I never got picked last on street ball. Mm-hmm. And they looked at Chuck, and Chuck was like, I definitely never got picked last. And it's kind of one of those situations where, you know, all these guys in their individual coming ups, probably never got picked last, right? But now, you know, they've never had to deal with that.
What's kind of funny, now you're saying that pick last, what's kind of funny about it was that after the Thursday night game, so I guess they released, so they finally released the entire rosters of which team, you know, which team was on, you know, which All-Star player was on which team.
They did that Thursday night.
They did that, yeah. So they did that Thursday night. So, of course, Steph picked his people. LeBron picked his people, and they released the list. And so Westbrook looked at the list, and he was at the bottom. Okay? So he thought that he got picked last. And so there's a little thinking that he thought he got picked last, and the person right above him was John Wall. And so a lot of people think that, you know, Westbrook had that game that he had, 46 points, 6 rebounds, 6 assists, because he felt slighted that not only was he picked last, But the guy in front of him right then and there was picked ahead of him. You know, John Wall, you know, he's a lot like Jordan in that way, that he finds slights and he uses them, you know, to kind of pump himself up.
One of the reporters pointed out to him that the list was in alphabetical order.
Yeah. No. Okay. So one of this is a guy that I know. His name is Andrew Schlecht. He's the guy that runs Down to Dunk podcast, one of the best podcasts out there for Thunder fans.
Next to ours.
No, no. I give him respect. I love
they're good. I've heard some of those.
I love his podcast. But yeah, so he asked him the question. He was like, so, you know, what does it feel like to be picked onto LeBron's team? And so, you know, it looked like Westbrook was giving a stock answer, like, oh, man, it's great and blah, blah, blah. And all of a sudden you hear Carmelo in the background saying, tell him how you really feel. Tell him how you really feel. And he was like, man, I think I got chosen last. You know, I looked on the list and, you know, my name's the last one. And like everybody in the, you know, everybody in the media scrum was like, it's an alphabetical order. And then Westbrook, you can see the relief just pour from his, you know, from his mind, and him being like, I told you it was alphabetical order. I told you. I just thought out.
I wasn't picked last.
It's moments like that that I think this team is becoming more of a brotherhood, coming more together. So kind of piggybacking off of that. So the 2 days before that,
on the Tuesday night game.
So on the game, whenever it basically showed that Paul George was snubbed, that he wasn't chosen for the team. You know, Westbrook, after the game, he had a, you know, basically said, you know, I can't believe that he didn't make the All-Star team. You know, so he basically threw some shade at, number one, Dame Lillard, saying that, you know, somebody had
before he got there, he threw some shade at the
Golden State Warriors, you know, saying, you know, one team with four guys, you know, that's a little bit too much.
Which I kind of agree this year. I think that
Draymond should have made it this year.
Well, I think that there are two of the players, in my regards, either Draymond or Klay, I think there could be a case made that either one of those could be left off in favor of Paul George.
Definitely, yeah.
Because I think Paul George's numbers are comparable, if not a little bit better.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. I agree with that. But then he's basically saying, you know, one of these guys had to basically beg his way onto the All-Star team.
He had to campaign because for the last 2 years, Dame Lillard has always felt that he has been snubbed.
Yeah.
And I would agree that in the previous 2 years, you could make a case for him being snubbed.
So, yeah, so he said that. And then after that, I think the day after that, or even that night, Rachel Nichols had an interview with Paul George. And he basically said that it's things like that that make his decision, this free agency decision that's coming up this summer, a lot easier. And so, you know, you're supposed to read that as saying that, you know, because Westbrook defended him and, you know, blah, 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 it would make his decision to stay in Oklahoma City, in Oklahoma City, a lot easier. It sounds that way. You know, if we mess around and have like a first round exit, I would be very interested to see what, if that changes. You know, we have been burnt before by athlete speak. And I say that while also saying that Paul George seems to be a lot more honest than Kevin Durant ever was, as far as he's open. He's an open book. You know, when he was in L.A., he told you, hey, I love L.A. Don't get me wrong. I would love to play here one day. Doesn't necessarily mean he's going to play there next year. But he said, I'd love to play here one day. You know, this is my home. This is where, you know, this is where I grew up. But he also, you know, so this, you know, when he comes out with this, you're kind of left with mixed emotions, number one. Number two, we're still hurt. We're still hurt by the whole Durant thing. And, you know, sorry to say that, you know, even though I think last podcast I said that I'm over it, I am over it. Don't get me wrong, but you still remember. You know, you're still hurt.
You forgive,
by it.
But you never forget.
Yeah, there you go. You forgive, but you never forget. Exactly. I mean, you never forget, and so I think the Oklahoma City mentality has been hardened a little bit by that. In that, we don't necessarily trust anything that anybody not named Russell Westbrook says. You know, so I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
So you text me when this came out. And you kind of hit me with the same thing that you're hitting me now.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of looked at it, and I'm thinking about it. And as I'm thinking about it, this is what I've come to believe. One, for the fact that we have noticed that Paul George has been more forthright with the media, mm-hmm. and stuff like that, and in his intentions and stuff like that. So I choose to take this for what it is, right?
Yeah.
I choose to believe that, you know, Russell Westbrook probably does make your decision a little bit easier when the time comes. But given past experiences and stuff like that, I'm going to take this for what it is and not read too much into it, mm-hmm. right? I think he likes being here. I think they like playing with each other, and I think they see that this could be something special. But at the end of the day, this is a business, and sometimes businesses don't line up with your intentions in January.
Yeah, true.
And so, you know, if he comes and if he stays, great. I'll be the first one there, you know, supporting him. And if he goes, you know, I'm sorry. I wish that we could have done something else, and I'll still be supporting him. But you as the Oklahoma City fan that we are, given prior situations, stuff like that, we just have to trust that what he's saying right now is honest, and know mm-hmm. that what he says in January is not the same thing that happens maybe in July timeframes, you know, because we have 6 months of different scenarios that can play out.
Oh my gosh,
and that can happen. So, you know, do I honestly think in January he means this? Yes.
Okay.
Now, does he mean now between now and free agency, could things change? Yes. Does that mean that he was less honest in January? No.
No, not necessarily.
He's just telling us how he feels right now. And I get it. I get it. I understand it. I can only imagine being that guy who feels like he was slighted for the All-Star, and your All-Star on your teammate who's also an All-Star is the first one in front of the meeting and be like, nah. You know, how could this happen? This and this and that.
Yeah.
You know, I can imagine that. That's like, yo, this guy's got my back. Especially Russell Westbrook, who's not known for campaigning for dudes and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's true.
That's not really his area, right? He's going to leave it all out on the floor and let what the floor happens speak for itself.
Yeah, it's like he says. He's not, like, when it comes to, like,
recruiting,
bringing players in, he's like, I'm not going to recruit anything. You know, we're gonna settle this out on the floor, and if you like what the product is on the floor, you stay, and if you don't, hey.
Yeah, so I bet you that, you know, and I get it, and I see it, and I'm with it, and so, you know, I'm just gonna trust that right now everything is lining up in our favor, and hopefully by July timeframe, everything still lines up in our favor.
Maybe Westbrook is getting so much on his nerves that it's making the decision easier also. I doubt that, but hey, there's always two sides of the coin, and you know, it's not just, you know, hey, he defended me, so I want to stay. No, yeah. Could also be he's getting on my damn nerves, and I want to go ahead and go. So just previewing the Philly game real quick. So Philly comes in. They've been doing real good here lately. Won a whole bunch of games. Not necessarily in a row, but within the past, let's say, 2 weeks, 2 to 3 weeks. And, of course, you know, we saw what happened last time they met. Triple overtime game. Westbrook talked a little bit of trash after the game.
Westbrook waves Joel Embiid off the court.
Goodbye. Go home. So now they get to return the favor, and they're coming to our place. And so, of course, we're going to be without Andre Robertson. So it'll be interesting to see how this game goes. I mean, I would not. Number one, I wouldn't doubt too much if we lose this game because of still being in shock, number one. Number two, it's the second night of a back-to-back for us, and we're traveling back to Oklahoma City. And it's basically what the third game in four nights type situation. So if we're a little bit out of gas, it's just one of those games that you might chalk up as a scheduled loss type thing. But yeah, it should be a good game. It's at 5:00 tomorrow Central Standard Time. You know, the Sunday games are usually at 6:00. So yeah, it'd be interesting to see. So I'm gonna go ahead and move on to Twitter questions. Got some questions from my man L. Moriart, Moriart Logan. A lot of these questions, a lot of these questions were sent out probably around Wednesday, and it sucks because this one has Robertson written on it. So the question is: This will be tough. Robes usually guards Jimmy Butler, Klay Thompson, and Harden. Is there really a wing on the market that can fill that void here? Barring foul trouble in the 2016 playoffs versus Golden State in Game 6, he's the one that could have prevented Klay's third quarter eruption. So, was this 4 hours ago? When he said, oh, it was 4 hours ago. Good job, Logan. So, is there anybody on the market? So, like I said, Alec Burks, Rodney Hood are the two names that kind of come up. I know they're from the same team. Maybe you get somebody like a bigger wing defender, like somebody like Damari Carroll out of Brooklyn. Maybe, I don't know, what's the guy out of Toronto, the guard out of Toronto that's been kind of relegated to the bench now? That guy, I don't know, I forgot his name. But yeah, I mean, it's the thing is, you're not going to find anybody that can guard these guys like Robertson does. And so that's the first thing that you kind of have to get that in your head. It sucks, man. It really does. And there's not, you know, there's not a lot of words that I can say about this, but what Robertson brings to this team is not really something that can be duplicated by just one player. The Thunder are going to have to play better defense collectively as a unit. And when we play those teams where we have to play,
CJ Miles?
Not CJ Miles. He's a young guy. He's a young guy off the bench. Let me see real quick.
Bruno Caboclo.
No, not Caboclo.
You got DeLon Wright.
No.
Pascal Siakam.
No, he's a guard. He's a guard.
Lorenzo Brown?
No. It's about 6'7". 6'4". He's about 6'4", 6'5".
Fred VanVleet?
No, it's not Fred.
Malcolm Miller?
No.
Alphonse McKinney?
Oh, my gosh. Do these guys really play in the NBA? I've never heard of half these guys.
They're on the... Okay, let's see.
Okay, how about 6'7", guys?
Forward guard, CJ Miles.
It's not going to be...
Norman Powell.
Norman Powell, that's him. Norman Powell. So Norman Powell signed a contract this offseason. Or close to the deadline, I think October 31st, around there. I think the Raptors are kind of regretting it. I mean, he hasn't really performed up to snuff to kind of deserve that contract. I don't know if you want to sign somebody like that. He's still a young guy. He has potential. He showed it, you know, the last couple of years. He can play a little bit. But yeah, I don't know. I think he's making like $11-12 million per. So, you know, it's not going to be a quick fix. You know, it's a situation where what do you want? Do you want a quick fix, and do you hope that Dre comes back healthy next year? Or are you going to bring in a player that may further compound your financial situation for the next couple seasons? And so, you know, Norman Powell would be somebody that's a possibility. Damari Carroll, again, like I said, from the Nets. I'm targeting more of the guys from Utah, Alec Burke and Rodney Hood. But there's nobody that's going to come in and give you exactly what Robertson gives you.
What about Wilson Chandler? We've tried before for Wilson Chandler.
Yeah, he's kind of been bad this year though. And I know. Yeah, that's somebody that Wilson Chandler. I think Wilson Chandler as on this team when they're fully healthy would have, you know, probably been a good difference bench maker addition. off the mm-hmm. bench and a veteran presence off the bench. But if you're bringing him in here to
eat up
try
minutes,
you know, yeah. to try to take up, you know, what Robertson did, he hasn't been very good this season. So yeah, I'm going after those guys. Hopefully we have enough assets to kind of make that work. I also had one more from
And I know they haven't been they haven't really been good, but there's a fire sale down in Charlotte. Anybody down there?
Ooh. I mean, if you're looking for a guy that could – Nick Batum, but Nick Batum is making $21 million.
Well, Nick Batum has a – I would automatically rule him out because he's struggling with an elbow injury.
Yeah, with an elbow injury.
Yeah.
Kemba
Walker?
Man – Charlotte is in a whole world of pain when it comes to finances. You know, you're looking at Kemba Walker, but Kemba Walker is not going to give you anything defensively. Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, if you thought Andre was bad offensively, have you seen this guy's shot?
Yeah, it's not very good.
It's not very pretty. I mean, it's the Roseanne Barr version of a jump shot. Marvin Williams, maybe, but Marvin Williams, again, he's a four. He's a bigger 3-4 type player. He's not going to give you what Robertson would give you. So
Harrison Barnes,
Dallas ain't getting rid of him. I mean, it'd be nice. Believe me, it would. But Dallas is not getting rid of him. Let me see.
Tyreke Evans from New Orleans.
It's a possibility, maybe. I had, so Sebastian Hansen at SebH1995. He said, how about trading for Tony Allen? Plays a similar style as Robertson, though he isn't even close, though he isn't even close to having the same influence on D, but could be a no-risk, high-reward type trade. I think Tony Allen as a defender is it's about 2 or 3 years past his prime. So even though it would be great for nostalgia reasons because he used to play at OSU, I don't think Allen would give you necessarily what you need on the defensive end for a lot of time. You know, I'm pretty sure he can go out there and he can defend for you for 10, 15 minutes every game. But if you're looking for somebody to take up, you know, the 30 to 35 minutes that Dre used to take up, no, it's probably not going to work out.
So here's a long shot.
Okay.
Danny Green.
Ooh, that's interesting. Because San Antonio is...
They're in flux right now.
They're a little bit in flux. I mean, I would take it.
I would, too. I mean, I don't know what we would have to give up to get him. But.
So, I mean, Danny Green was just on the defensive team last year. He's on. Was he first team or second team? I mean, regardless, he was on the defensive team.
And his offense is significantly better than Andre Robertson's.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, that's a pretty good one. I don't know. We shall see on that. But, man, there's not a whole bunch of options out there. There really isn't. But like I said, it's a good thing this injury happened on January 27th and not on February 9th. Because February 9th, we really don't got anything, you know, any kind of options out there except for the buyout market. And here's something that you, here's a little dirty secret about the buyout market. You're not going to get any stars. You're not going to get any players of impact in the buyout market. You can get somebody that maybe comes off the bench. More than likely, you're not going to get a starter. You're not going to get somebody that's going to impact your team that much.
I just got another one, mm-hmm. and I know this team is trying to get rid of him.
Who's that?
Jordan Clarkson.
Yeah. I don't mean to poo-poo every...
No, poo-poo away. I'm just throwing out names here.
No, but you got to understand, the wound is fresh when it comes to Robertson, and I don't mean to poo-poo every option you bring up. But Clarkson defensively is not there. He's not.
That's fair.
It's we're gonna, this team is gonna need like the All-Star break. You know, hopefully they bring in somebody.
Yeah.
But they're gonna need the All-Star break to kind of do like a mini training camp to kind of readjust their defensive schemes, their defensive philosophies, and maybe even offensive. You know, also because the offense plays differently whenever Robertson's on the floor than when he's not. You know, they've gotten used to this guy that can't shoot, but he's able to move around. He's able to, you know, run the baseline. And Robertson himself, to his credit, has kind of adjusted himself to play more of a role that he plays now. He's not shooting as many threes, things of that nature. So yeah, man, it's just, you know, the wound is fresh, and I'm
here's the last one, and we can move on.
Okay, go ahead.
Kent Bazemore, Atlanta.
He makes so much money, though, man.
Yeah, and I know, but the only reason I bring him up is because I know a lot of teams are after him.
And I mean, Kent Bazemore, if you look at him, I mean, he's a lanky, long defender. He can shoot the threes, you know, from time to time, but he's making so much money. He's making like $17, $18 million, I think, if not more than that. So as far as how we get him, you know, who do we have to trade to get him? Are we having to, you know, you got to understand that. Number one, we're a man down as far as we only have 14 players on our roster.
Right.
So if you're going to trade three or four players for one player, you're going to have to come up with like four or five players from somewhere else. You know, so it's no easy fix. It's no easy fix. You know, this is why they pay Sam Presti the big bucks. So, you know, I saw Troy Weaver at the he was at the OU Alabama game. He was scouting over there.
You know who else was there?
Who?
Like three or four scouts from the Cav and the owner, Dan Gilbert, was in building.
Dang, really?
Yeah, he was in the building looking at Trae Young. Well, I mean, Trae Young for sure. And
Colin Sexton's pretty good.
Yeah, number three for Alabama, correct?
Yeah, he's the guy, the point guard.
Yeah,
the point guard with the crazy hair. You know the guy that really impressed me in that game? So Alabama's big man kind of impressed me. I forgot what his name was, but the shooting guard for them. I think his name is Hubert Jones for Alabama. He really impressed me. Like, he had Thunder player written all over him. He was long, athletic. He was making, you know, big-time, you know, winning plays. So that's somebody that I think, you know, whenever you have a large contingent go to a game to see, you know, you think they're seeing, you know, a certain, you know, certain players. But sometimes they end up looking at other players and saying, what do we got there?
Well, that certain player's on the list. But,
yeah.
But there's extra space on their notepad for
definitely
surprises.
Definitely. Yeah. So, and I mean, so Troy Weaver has to go to the game knowing probably that he's not going to get a chance to get Trae Young or to get Colin Sexton.
Right.
Those guys are top 10, you know, projected. So he has to go to the game probably looking for somebody else. And if this guy, I really liked him, Hubert Jones, I think I said. You know, if he declares and he's not necessarily – he doesn't necessarily look like top-notch talent. But if we can get him, like, early in the second round, maybe move up somehow or something like that, he's definitely somebody that looks like a Thunder player. I got a couple more questions from El Moriart. So if you had to pick – if you had to pick one of the three to bolster the bench – which one would you pick, and how do you see the fit? So Jonathan Simmons, Buddy Hield, or Alec Burks? So again, this was written – this question was written before the Robertson injury. But if we had to get somebody to bolster the bench, I would probably go after Alec Burks. But now I would probably go after Alec Burks to be in the starting lineup, you know. So yes, I would go out to him, but I would like all three of them. All three of them. Jonathan Simmons is a tough-nosed, you know, defender. He gives you a little bit on the offensive end, but he's really tough-nosed on the defensive end. Buddy Hield, of course, is a shooter. And then, of course, Alec Burks is probably the best of both worlds when it comes to all three of those players. And another question from El Moriart. If Melo opts out this season and you have a choice to bring him back for less – or go after Kevin Love, you're Sam Presti. What do you do?
Wow.
if Kevin Love is still on the team, or still on the Cavs this offseason, which is not looking like he is, but I don't know. That's a good question.
That's an interesting one. Because on the one hand, Kevin Love can give you some three-point shooting, but he can also help out
on the
defensively down there with Steven Adams. But on the other hand, you know, he just hasn't been the same player since he left.
Yeah.
Minnesota?
Oh, no. That's a good question. I know there's, you know, you have the history with Westbrook and Love from the UCLA days. UCLA. They're real good friends. That's a very good question. That's a very good question. At this point, I don't know. I would have to see. I know Kevin Love makes like $22-23 million. I would probably opt to go with Melo making less than Kevin Love, but Kevin Love is very talented, and I think if you pair him with Steven Adams, his effectiveness would be that much greater. But you'd still have a liability on defensive end, just like you do with Melo, maybe even more so than Melo. So that'd be something to watch right there. I think this trade deadline, we're going to see a lot of player movement. I don't know. I think Melo at less is probably a little bit better for this team.
Yeah, I think I still go with Melo at less.
So, all right. So moving on. Let me see. So that's all for the. I had somebody asking about Jonathan Simmons, Brenus in a second in the Boston second rounder for Jonathan Simmons. I would love to do that. I don't know if Orlando wants to do that, but I would love to do that to bring Jonathan Simmons in to bolster the bench to give us more of a defensive bulldog mentality type thing. But yeah, that's this trade. So you know. If anybody had written a trade primer before tonight, I hope you have not published it because it's probably going to be completely different after today. As far as, you know, trades that the Thunder could possibly make or could possibly need to make. So moving on to some NBA news. All right, so DeMarcus Cousins. So he tore his Achilles tendon here Friday night.
8 seconds into the or remaining in the game.
That's horrible. So the Pelicans were playing the Rockets, and you know they were winning, and so somebody from the Pelicans, I think it was Davis, was it Anthony Davis that was shooting a free throw? Somebody from the Pelicans was shooting a free throw, and he missed it, and DeMarcus Cousins went to go kind of chase after it. He planted that foot, and he went down in a heap. No, he didn't go down in a heap. He tried to step on it, and then he went down in a heap. So MRI confirmed that he had a torn Achilles, out for the season. Then this morning, the Grizzlies released a statement saying that Mike Conley, I guess, was having season-ending surgery on his foot, and so he'll be out. You know, he's been out since November anyways. But I guess, you know.
They just put the nail on the coffin.
Exactly. You know, as far as Memphis is not doing that well this season. But maybe they were trying to kind of hang around the eighth spot. And maybe if he came back, make a little run. But that ain't happening. And then, let's see. So that's crappy, man. That's, within a 24-hour period, we lost three, you know, big-time players. As far as, you know, let's just say two. You know, Mike Conley was out since November.
Right.
But the entire West kind of changes now. You know, the entire, like, I keep looking at this and I keep on saying.
The Pelicans are right behind us for the.
Yeah, the Pelicans are. And
they were making a run. They were playing well. They were gelling.
But what I hate about this is that the evil empire that is the Golden State Warriors, they never, you know, nothing ever happens to them.
It keeps getting better for them.
You know, it's just like, you know, when they suffer injuries, they suffer a sprain that keeps whatever player out for 3 weeks or whatever. And it's not necessarily anything that's season ending. No Achilles injury, no nothing like that. You know, it's just like the strong keep on getting stronger. You know, it's like everywhere else in the NBA is kind of crumbling around them. And they're just like, oh, look at us. You know, we're just going to shoot threes and have fun and beat the Celtics on Saturday night. And watch the Cleveland Cavaliers just completely implode on themselves. And watch the best defender on Oklahoma City go down. Watch one of the big men on the two big man tandem in New Orleans go down. And it's just like, come on, man. I mean, if this is how the NBA is going to be for the next 3 to 4 years, it's going to be boring.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to be boring after a while. So that's me complaining about the Golden State Warriors still being the Golden State Warriors and the NBA around them kind of going down in a heap just because, you know, Kevin Durant. Screw Kevin Durant. It's all his fault. So
before we get to this, since you already brought it up, let's jump over that first and we'll come back to this.
Okay.
So the Cleveland Cavaliers imploding, having the dreaded team meeting, not only with the coaches, the GM was there. Everybody and their mama was there.
Yeah.
And weirdly enough, what I took from the story is that somehow they blamed that Oklahoma City smackdown that we laid on them on Kevin Love not coming back into the game because he was sick. The man had to defend his sickness to the team.
Yeah, I know. And that's
how does one guy being sick
affect a team that much?
Exactly. How does everybody in the locker room turn on Kevin Love because he didn't come back into the game because he was sick,
or that he wasn't there on the bench? I think that's what the big thing was, that not that he didn't come back in the game, that he wasn't there on the bench supporting his teammates, and then he didn't go to practice the next day because he was still sick. You know, it's just like it's like that team is looking for a scapegoat somewhere. And they can't find it. So they got to find something. They got to find, you know, they're not blaming J.R. Smith for not being J.R. Smith of the past couple seasons.
They're not blaming Tristan Thompson for that $80 million contract they expected him to come into.
Yeah, so they're not blaming him. They're blaming Kevin Love because he got sick and he left. I mean, I don't know how sick he was. I don't know if he had the boo-boo guts. I don't know if, you know, he had the flu.
Well, just think about it.
But just the fact that you had to explain yourself and say that, yeah, I was sick and this is what was going on, that's ridiculous.
That's, and then on top of that, Coach Tyronn Lue comes out. First of all, LeBron comments kind of on the status of whether or not Tyronn Lue is going to get fired.
Yeah, I know. Oh, that team is a.
And then he says he's going to make a lineup roster change, and that roster change is
Tristan Thompson.
Tristan Thompson in coming back into the starting lineup.
Yeah, but who do you go in for?
For Kevin Love, if I'm
no, I wasn't. It wasn't J.R. Smith.
Exactly.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
Exactly.
They still came out against San Antonio. Oh,
for
lost.
Jay Crowder.
Jay Crowder. There we go. Yeah. And my thing is, I heard, you know, this is what I heard from that, was that the person basically leading the charge against Kevin Love was Isaiah Thomas.
Isaiah Thomas, a guy who hasn't even been there yet.
Bro, you've been there half a season. You've only played in like the last 8, 9, 10 games. Take a chill pill, man. Take a chill pill. You know, I don't, that team is not long for itself. What, you know, the team that you see here today will not be the team that you definitely won't see next year. It may be a completely different team February 9th, you know, after the trade deadline.
This just leads me to believe that he's definitely not staying in
Cleveland. No, he's not.
So then,
go ahead.
Now we're getting to, but before that, so let's lead up the week. Kevin Durant picks up his second ejection of the year.
His
fourth ejection of the year.
Fourth or fifth. One of the two.
Something like that. He's got 10 technical fouls already.
Yeah.
Which means that 7 more and he gets suspended for a game.
6 more. Yeah, 7 more.
Seven more. So he came out that night and said that he felt like the referee basically had it out for him after he criticized one of his calls in the first half.
Mm-hmm.
And he was just looking for a reason to tee him up and get him out of there. Comes out the next day and goes back on what he says.
Yeah.
And says that he was just being a prima donna a-hole and he was a jerk and that he deserved whatever the league gave him. And so, of course, the league slapped him with a $15,000 fine for criticizing the ref. Now, previously in other podcasts, I had told you that the tensions were boiling over between these referees and the players,
mm-hmm.
and that I thought that the league was going to or needed to address this soon. Hence what comes out Friday.
Uh-huh.
The league is implementing a 5-point initiative between the players, the referees, and the coaches league. And stuff like uh-huh. that, the league himself, which will take place during the All-Star break. So this 5-point initiative will consist of Johnson and McCutchen and their staff will conduct meetings with all 30 teams to discuss rule interpretations, on-court conduct, the expectations of NBA referees, and this meeting will take place during the All-Star break week.
Okay.
Second point, the league will reemphasize its respect for the rules of the game with the referees, coaches, and players to ensure consistent enforcement of these violations. The referees operations department will expand its overall rules education initiative for coaches, players, and team personnel to ensure clarity of the game's rules and their proper interpretation. Johnson and McCutchen, which are the two senior referees. Monty McCutchen and Will Johnson, I want to say is the other guy's name.
Yeah.
They're the two senior referees and in charge of these trainings that normally happens behind the scenes in the season.
That just sounded like a baby lotion marketing
it's
firm.
It's a pharmaceutical company.
Yeah.
So Johnson and McCutchen will conduct enhanced training for the referees on conflict resolution. In addition, they will more closely monitor the on-court interactors of coaches, players, and referees to ensure referee decorum meets league standard.
Mm.
So the referees are going to now be held accountable for some of their actions. And the fifth initiative is to, through the NBA's Officiating Advisory Council, the league will create opportunities for engagement with all key stakeholders to find common ground between the parties.
I'm surprised that they have never done to kind of quell this stuff. Why don't they mic up the refs? And what I mean, not for TV, not for anything like that.
For within the league
office? Within the league office. Why don't they mic up the refs? You know, a person cannot go back on what they said if it's recording on their mics.
Right.
You know, so and this covers both. You know, this kind of covers both parties because if a ref – you know, makes a mistake and then goes up to that player and says, hey, my bad, I made that mistake. That's one thing. But if a player is F you, F you, F you, and he gets tossed, or if he's F you, F you to another player and he gets tossed and he's like, I didn't really do anything, blah, 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 you know, the proof is in the pudding.
Yeah, but that opens up the league to so many different cans of worms that I don't think they'd want to go down that path. Because then you're going to have a call. You're going to have a demand for people wanting to hear the audio.
I mean, in a big game. You have cameras all over the place anyway. So anytime there's a conflict, like a big time fight, the first play, there's a reason there's a camera that just looks directly at the bench.
Right.
Because if a fight happens and people get off the bench, they want to see exactly who came off.
I agree with you. But I also don't think the league, we all understand that there's superstar rules.
Mm.
And we understand that referees probably do go up to some of these superstars and like, you know, my bad, I missed the call or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't think the league wants physical evidence to prove that.
Okay, I got you. You don't want somebody, you know, making a little thumb drive thing and then, you know, leaking it out
on YouTube.
Was it Chelsea Manning or whatever that guy that's a girl now?
Yes. So I think the league will shy away from that. But we'll see what comes in the second half of this initiative.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a start in the right direction. But there's got to be more consistency.
I just wonder what that conflict resolution is going to be about, because, you know, is it going to be, hey, let them air out their grievances, or is it going to be more of, hey, as soon as they say F this, tee them up?
I think it's going to be somewhere more towards let them air out their grievances to a certain extent, to a certain conduct.
So the whole conflict resolution. Are players going to be involved in that, or is it just the referees?
No. This is going to be players, referees, and the league.
So they're all going to be in the same thing. So we're talking about probably a player representative from each team.
I think there probably is going to be a representative. The resolutions within the referees are probably going to be primarily the referees themselves having seminars within their own organization to better quail, you know, some of these situations and instances. But I would imagine that there would be on this officiating advisory committee, it would only make sense that there would be a representative from the Players Association, mm-hmm. that there would be a representative from the league, a representative from the officiating association.
So, I mean, I just see, like, I know, you know, I go on leadership conferences sometimes for my job, and I know sometimes you're just sitting there and you're just like, come on, let's get this day over. I can't imagine referees and players, and they're just like, come on, I got to do a sponsorship with Sprite. I got to do this. I got to do that. Let's hurry up. Come on.
Well, I bet you they have better perks, though.
Oh, definitely. So,
all right, other news around the league. So I'm going to shoot off some things for I just want you to give me your thoughts and feelings on it. The Bucks fired Jason Kidd Monday morning.
The Bucks are languishing in the eighth spot in the East. I think it was time for him to go. I know Giannis Antetokounmpo didn't really like it too much, but he's got to kind of learn that if you ain't producing,
no. But here's the thing: go. What do you think about Giannis knowing before Jason Kidd even got fired?
I thought that was pretty bad for the team. I don't understand that.
My man was gonna shoot. He shot him a text.
He shot him a text. They're gonna fire you.
I'm gonna try to go save. You want me to call? I'm gonna call the owner. I'm gonna call my agent. I'm gonna try to save your job.
No, that's pretty bad.
Okay, so
here's the thing with the Bucks, man. I kind of feel bad for the Bucks because the Bucks are you're looking at a small market team that lucked into a great player and are trying to build around this great player, but they're just not hitting. You know, some of it's injury with Jabari Parker.
Some of it's suspension. OJ Mayo got 2-year suspension for.
Yeah, some of it's that. But I mean, some of it's just like, you know, they're still trying to find like a dynamic point guard. You know, I think Eric Bledsoe is working out a little bit better. You know, like the big men out there, they're not really, you know, you have Thon Maker, you have John Henson, but they're not really impact type players. And so the Bucks are kind of in that mid zone right now, where if they don't make the right moves in 2 to 3 seasons, Mr. Antetokounmpo is not going to be in Milwaukee anymore.
Yeah.
And so they're going to lose their golden goose. And so they have to start all over. So it just kind of sucks because, I mean, when I look at them, I see the Thunder at the same time. You know, that could be the Thunder easily.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
According to sources around the league, there is tension within the Spurs organization, between the Spurs organization and the representatives of Kawhi Leonard, over how they're handling his treatment, his rehab, and situations, according to league sources. Of course, RC Buford has come out, which is general manager of the Spurs, come out and denied all this.
Yeah.
Something, nothing.
I'm just amazed that the robot named Kawhi Leonard actually has an opinion and has a voice.
Well,
he has not said anything. It's representative.
There's his league sources that said this is festering within the organization. Of course, you wouldn't know because he doesn't say anything.
I can see it.
The most I've ever heard him say something is in that NBA commercial.
Yeah. I honestly could see it, but I think a lot of it has to do with frustration over this injury. This is not your run-of-the-mill, hey, 4 to 6 weeks, you'll be okay. Or this seems to be something that is ongoing, and anytime he tries to work out, it flares up again. So I believe he's frustrated. I believe, you know, as far as how they're handling the situation, maybe he thinks that he can play. You know, maybe that's a situation where he thinks that he can play. And the team is
just being cautious.
They're just being, you know, overly cautious, like the Spurs usually do. You know, the Spurs are a lot like New England in football, where you hear things, but
you just don't know.
There's just such a wall around them that you don't know. I mean, and I'm pretty sure a lot of people look at the Thunder like the same way, and you know, the Thunder have, up to this season, they've been kind of that way, where they have a wall around everybody and just kind of just put out enough information that they need to put out, but everything else kind of stays in-house. This is a new look for the Spurs. This is a new, you know, something new that doesn't really happen in San Antonio. But I don't think there's much to be taken from it.
To the point where Pop tapped Tony on the shoulder and was like, bruh, I think it's time for you to go to the bench.
Yeah, I mean, he's got that kind of clout with those types of players. I mean,
and it makes sense. You know, they're also teetering on that rebuilding phase. They got a lot of old guys, and so they have some good young guys, and so I might as well start getting those guys experience, so that when your Kawhi Leonard comes back, you have those young.
And I mean, it may be next season before he comes back full time.
Maybe,
you know, but yeah, as long as if you can give players like DeJounte Murray, if you can give Davis Bertans just more time to develop and be ready for next season. Well, then, hey, you do what you got to do. Maybe you get something for what's his name? Not Kawhi Leonard. LaMarcus Aldridge. You get something for him on the market. But, yeah, I mean, it's the NBA. Like I was saying a couple minutes ago, the entire NBA is crumbling, you know, beneath itself, you know, imploding on itself. And then the Golden State Warriors are standing, you know, on top of the mountain. Just
hitting fat.
Yeah, just getting fat, just, you know, celebrating.
Okay. Everybody for sale on the Charlotte Hornets, including Kemba Walker. And then Ernest came out and said that he doesn't want to trade Kemba Walker except for another All-Star.
Oh, yeah.
Is he kind of
I mean, it's kind of stupid if you ask me. you're going to give your one All-Star away, which I don't think Kemba made. He didn't make the team this year. But you're going to trade your one guy that used to be an All-Star. And you think somebody else is going to give you an All-Star of theirs? No, it's not going to happen.
So we talked about this earlier. We hinted at Dame Dollar actually coming back at Russ, talking about he earned his spot.
I mean, he did. I mean, just look, you don't want to be the guy that campaigns for your spot. He did earn it. Don't get me wrong. He's played very well this season. I think there have been times where CJ McCollum has played better than him.
Yeah.
But the numbers kind of prove that he's played very well this season. But the whole campaigning thing, that just kind of looks bad on you when you have to do that for your own self.
So last one that I want your opinion, then something else I just saw. Report came out on Bleacher Report, the unwritten rules of the Oklahoma City bench.
What's that?
So one of them is Russell Westbrook gets the last seat.
That's okay. That's
apparently that last seat is a hot commodity on all teams. To the point where I think Patrick Patterson, as soon as he got there, they told him, hey, that last seat is Russell Westbrook's.
I mean, he's always sat there. Don't get me wrong. I mean, that's, hey, he's a superstar on the team. He's the MVP. You don't come in here from Toronto being.
Well, I think
I don't think it was a big time on Patrick Patterson.
No, what I think is just kind of some of the unwritten rules. They just happened to be talking about Oklahoma City because I think one of the players had let it out. But I think it was kind of one of the things that how the team dynamics, because that last end of the bench seat is a hot commodity, and it's usually reserved for key superstar players on each team. Everybody knows who to go sit, who sits on that chair.
Yeah,
so I just thought it was interesting to see behind the wall for bench players. Oh, another thing was don't get cut. So they said bench players oftentimes get hungry and they eat all the time while they're on the bench and stuff like that. So one of the rules was don't get caught on camera eating.
What are they eating, though? That's the question.
So the example that they used was.
They're not eating popcorn. That's just
I want to say it was
like NBA blooper reels.
Yeah, I want to say it was a rookie on Boston or something like that. Mm. So he had his Gatorade cup, and inside his Gatorade cup, he had like a chocolate candy bar.
I mean, I could see them eating like a protein bar or something like that.
Well, I'm sorry, that's what it was, one of those Gatorade chocolate candy, but it looked like a candy bar, right? He had it inside the cup, so he looked around and then brought the cup, pulled it out, took a bite of it. And then the veteran who was sitting down there, who had just come out of the game, he's like, hey, the camera's red. The light is red. Had to tell him that the light was on. Arena is watching him eat
these fools
food
are,
on the sideline.
These fools are acting like, you know, like they're in the middle of third period in high school and they can't eat in class and stuff like that.
One of those unwritten rules for most teams is don't get caught eating on camera.
That's funny. That's funny.
And then did you see Draymond Green kind of poking fun at Steven Adams for kicking somebody in the groin?
Yeah, I saw that. You can go kick rocks somewhere else, man.
The only difference I will say, though, is that Steven Adams was being pulled down.
I'll tell you what,
when
man.
He flung his...
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
He didn't jump up and fling his layout. He was being pulled down.
Steven Adams has a huge foot. I'm sorry.
I bet you it hurt.
I would not want to be... Because, I mean, as he was falling back, it looked like he kind of cocked that foot and just kind of like... kind of like spring motion and just kind of went up into Bradley Beal's nether regions. I hope Bradley Beal is able to have children after that one, because we know that Steven Adams is not able to have children now because of after what Draymond did to him.
Yeah.
So I got nothing else, man. I'm a little bit.
It was a very busy week in the NBA.
It was a very, very busy, very busy week. I'm a little bit somber today. Hopefully the Thunder will be able to kind of get over this, this injury, but, we got the trade deadline coming up February 8th. The next podcast will definitely be focusing on the trade deadline coming up for the Thunder. We got three games, I think, coming up this week. We got, Philly tomorrow. We got Washington on Tuesday, and then we got a back to back with, is it New Orleans and Denver or something like that?
It is Philly on Sunday, Washington on Tuesday, and then Thursday and Friday is Denver and New Orleans.
Yeah, Denver and New Orleans. So we got a busy week on the floor. We got a busy week probably coming up as far as the front office goes. So make sure you are checking out Now That's ThunderBasketball.com for a lot of your news, a lot of your Thunder-related news. Make sure you're checking us out on Twitter. But other than that, hope you guys have a safe week. Shout outs to Andre Robinson. Get well soon. Do what you got to do to get back next season as best as possible. But until then, we will see you guys next week.
Have a good night.
All right. Bye. Nintendo Sega Genesis.